March 9th, 2026 Budget and Administration Committee for the Cameron Park Community Services District at 5:30 p.m. Jeff, will you please take the roll call?
Oh, yes. Director Bazette.
Present.
Director Gilchrist.
Present.
I always have to look at you guys when I say that because it's harder than you believe. You just forget people's names. We have a quorum.
Okay. Public is here.
The public is here. We have new public, too. This is exciting.
You only have 10,000 people represented.
Yeah, you got cut in half tonight.
Have you had a chance to look at the agenda, and do you have any questions?
I did review it, and of course I was not there, but it looks appropriate. I will prove that we
the
accept
only,
it. Is there an adjustment?
Yeah, the only items, it's under staff updates, so I don't think we necessarily have to have everything listed, but under staff updates, we'll be talking about fire engine purchase, and just give you an update on that.
All right, so your motion is to accept the agenda with the addition.
And where will that lie?
Number 10.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it'll be under number 10, yeah.
Okay. So moved.
Fire engine purchase?
Yes, and just give you an update on that.
Okay. I will second the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. How excited you're going to it. Okay, and we will be approving the minutes from the January and the February meeting, and I realize you were not here, Sid, but
I did review it. Yeah. Does it seem appropriate?
Yes.
I move that we accept the minutes.
I will second. All in favor?
Aye. The closed session last time.
Yeah, that was great.
All right. Now we will have an open forum for members of the public may speak on any item that is not on the agenda this evening. Nope. Okay. Moving on. Department matters. The first item is Mr. Hornstra, landscaping contract.
Thank you very much. Tonight I'm bringing forward to you to review and discuss and hopefully have the committee forward onto the full board. The approval of a landscape contract, this is the RFP that went out last year. There's a timeline in all of this, but on February 4th we did the official bid opening. There were four respondents to the RFP, and then part of the RFP had a ranking of how we were going to grade these, because it's important. What I've learned in the public works area is you don't always want to go with low bidder. You have to have that strong consideration for that, but you also need to make sure that they're responsive, that they are qualified, et cetera, et cetera. So we have a ranking matrix that we put all of these bids through. A little bit different on this time around was when we did the bid opening, the only thing we discussed, and it was a public bid opening, three of the four bidders were there, and all we did at that time was announce the annual price of their bid. As you can see in the table at the bottom of page one, two were very close, and they were within our expected budget range, and the other two were not very close. And so, rather...
Why did they even bid?
Yeah.
Well, they don't.
Especially
they don't.
Citywide.
Yeah. Well, they don't know.
They don't know what it is.
But they were.
We had.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
To add some color, if you will, to that, we had a job walk, and they were all invited to do the job walk. Actually, another company that did the job walk did not even bid.
What is that? Explain that, please.
Okay, so a job walk is we met. Good English. We met over at Krista McCullough. I explained to them the scope of work for each park, and then we caravaned to park by park by park.
You showed them every park.
So they could see every park and what my expectations were for those services.
Right.
So they knew right up front, this is what we want, this is what we don't want. You know, start here, in there. So it was very, very specific. Took a few hours to do all that. So one company, like I said, they did not want to bid on it. The other two were just way out of it. And, you know, going through this ranking takes time. And so what we just said is, look, we're not even going to consider them, so let's just focus on Elite and Zuri. And so you can see here that the lowest bidder got all 40 of the available points. And then the second lowest, what I did is I calculated the percent that they were off from the low bid, and I took that percent off of the 40 points. So in this case, they got 35 of the 40 points. They were essentially 6%. This I didn't round. I mean, I rounded up. I didn't have it to the decimal place. So you can see the final ranking. both of these companies are very high quality companies. Both of them are very good. We really couldn't lose with either of them, but Elite really stood out in their proposal and their presentation. The interesting thing about Zuri is they are a like a general contractor, if you will. They subcontract out various works. Elite is the contractor themselves. So very detailed proposal, very detailed response. Their references were very good. They do work in Roseville. They do work all around the area. They're based out of Lincoln.
Out of where?
Out of Lincoln.
Lincoln, okay.
So the,
go ahead. Just to tie into that, you can finish.
Okay. So when we looked at that, and I said, you know, the first cut, if you will, was, were they within our budget? And as you'll remember from conversations, we have not filled a maintenance worker two in the parks area this, well, the period of the time I've been here, in anticipation of bringing on this contracted service. And so the monies that we have remaining in this budget and will be going forward will be coming from that unfilled position. So even though it is a $63,000 add, that money, and if you'll remember our mid-year budget review, we were well ahead or behind, if you will, in the parks maintenance salaries. So all of that to say, we have a very good contractor. They took no exceptions to our contract terms. Part of the RFP is I sent out our standard contract that had been reviewed by our attorney, and they took no exceptions to it. So when this goes to the board with your approval, we'll be able to execute that contract pretty quickly, even hopefully getting them in sometime in April, if not then by May.
So Mark, how much, kind of round numbers, if you were to do these five parks in-house, what are we looking at? Are we looking at anywhere near $62,000? Is it 75, or how much are we saving by?
So if you look at a fully burdened maintenance two worker with all the benefits and all that, it's close to about the $82,000 range.
How many employees is this?
This is a full team. Maintenance worker wouldn't do all five parks by himself.
No. Right now we have three maintenance workers that do these parks.
So it would have cost us, $240,000?
Well, they also do other things. So during the peak growing season, they start mowing on Tuesdays. They kind of finish up on Thursdays. Okay. But they're also doing other things. For today, for example, we had a big tree branch go down in the dog park. So they got off the mowers. They went and they took care of that for safety reasons. So they do other things at the same time. So it's not a pure one-to-one. You could, if I had just one maintenance worker that I would dedicate to it, it would have maybe been that area. But because of practices, we got to get it done really quickly, and you can't need more one.
I think two thoughts. One is with Zuri, I kind of looked at that as a subcontractor kind of a model. So Zuri is a larger company. They go out and find the people that do the work for us. And so there's also a margin that they need to make as well. And so by going direct, we know that this is who we're going to get. We are talking directly to the company as opposed to a third party who will then talk to the company. And so, and they came in lower.
And will we be getting the same people each time?
They're assigning a crew.
So part of the RFP.
Once they learn our parks, it's going to be the same guys doing it.
Yeah. So part of the RFP response is they had to tell me who the team is going to be, and I got resumes for that team.
Wow. And how many people would that team be?
So the team, the actual team in the parks is four.
Yes.
But I have a local account manager. They even have a safety supervisor. They'll obviously handle more than just our parks, but he goes around to make sure that whatever they're doing safely and things like that. Full administrative overhead structure, too, which was, that's part of the impressive part of their policy or proposal over than others.
I think the other thing that's even more important is, what do we spend on leasing an
mower? Okay, yeah.
So we spent $6,000?
We spent $6,000 just to lease a mower while one of our other mowers, which all of them are very old, and they keep breaking down. As a matter of fact, I keep buying new parts for this. This takes that headache and it puts it on them. They have to maintain the mowers. They have to acquire new mowers. All of that hardware maintenance overhead of that, which I didn't account for in that salary. That's all going to them as well.
How much does a new zero-turn commercial mower cost?
Oh, they're $40,000+.
So clearly we don't want to have to make that right. investment anymore.
Yeah.
And we're getting to the point where we've spent a lot of money repairing them in addition to leasing one while the others are down, because you got to continue to mow the lawn. So that's where we start looking, going, let's get out of the mowing business. Yeah. That's what we need.
And there are also, there. If you've noticed for a while there, you couldn't buy a gas-powered lawnmower, even a push mower. Mm-hmm. There are CARB, California Air Resources Board, requirements coming down. When that next hammer comes down, they're trying to electrify all of these types of machines. Yeah. We don't want to be stuck in the middle of all that.
You're stuck with the one you can't use.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's one other I question about is pruning the trees, because we've contracted that out, haven't we?
Yeah, this
is that part of the contract or not?
No, that's out of scope of the contract. Mm-hmm. We have our great relationship with both Growlersburg and the Ponderosa crews, plus our crews have the tools to, well, like today, we had to run out of the dog park and do that. So that will remain within our purview.
Okay.
So this is strictly mow and blow?
It's mow, blow, edge, cleaning out the sidewalks, you know, all of that kind of work.
So we have a lot of hedges on the road up to Ponderosa. Get that.
That's Eastwood Park LLAD. Mm.
Yeah,
that's an LLAD. That was not part of the scope.
Okay.
We do use the Growlersburg crew. Well, it depends on what road you're on. If you're on Meter Road.
Meter is what I'm thinking. Isn't it a long, you know.
It's a long stretch, and it's a very busy road.
Yeah.
So we contract with a company that has all the trained people for road control. If you've come down Cambridge anytime lately, you'll see all the signage and all that.
Right.
So when we're trimming up Meter Road on the south side, they actually have signage crews doing that. It's a very dangerous road. I mean, people go flying
through
there.
They go fast.
But, but those are in the two
LLADs. Yeah, that's Eastwood LLAD and North.
So they cover that cost?
Yeah.
Well, no.
Are they a CSD responsibility?
The cost for that goes to the LLADs. It's part of their annual assessment.
They're paying for that.
They're paying for that.
And who actually does it?
Company right now, I want to go back out to bid.
So it's contracted out?
It's
okay.
Centillion.
That's what I'm trying to understand. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions?
That's all I have.
Okay.
Take it out to the public. Any questions on this topic?
Sounds great. Just the technical approach, can you explain how you actually came across the scoring on that? I don't know if you mentioned that.
No. So on the technical approach, how do they handle safety with their crews? How do they handle quality control? Is there somebody that's... Because if you ask the crew, hey, how did you do? Oh, that was all great, right? So who else is going to come out and do that? What type of equipment do they have? There have been instances where somebody says, oh, yeah, we have that equipment, and they don't. And then they try to go out and do it by hand. So it was really a give us a list of all your equipments that you have, making sure they have what they need to do the job, plus the safety factor, plus the quality control and things like that.
Okay. Thank you. And just want to add to what Mo was saying, and you, Mark, with respect to the commercial mower, it's a good move to not actually invest in something like that, especially if California is moving towards electrification.
Yeah.
You're going to have a stranded asset, essentially. Once you buy it, it's there, and then who are you going to sell it to?
We're stuck with it. Yeah.
Right.
Sell it to.
Yeah. Going to the core competencies of the CSD makes more sense, and then kind of contracting out anything else that you can't do or can do cheaper is a smart move.
Yeah. Thank you.
You bring a really good point. No one's going to lose their job. We want our parks maintenance workers to work on fixing things and repairing things and preventative maintenance rather than the mundane task of mowing. That takes them away every time, but we've got all these things that are broken. They're actually going to be able to focus on those broken items. So that's a huge plus.
So I guess I do have a question, because I know there's probably, you don't need to mow the lawn every week in the winter months. Do they do other things? Is there other scope of work that they would pick up, or do they just shorten their work hours? How does that work?
By general, they shorten their work hours during the winter months, but they still have to get out there and mow. Fescue grows year-round, just not as fast.
Okay.
And what we tend to find, and this has been a great year for things to grow, but not so great, because early in this, like, we started doing mowing more regularly early in February, really, because it stays so warm.
Yeah.
But edging, making sure that the pathways to the various parks are all clean and clear, it becomes more of a keeping the mud off the sidewalks and
blowing
the pathways.
The leaves, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, so they shift.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And this is something that we've talked to the Ask Me local, the unit president, and she says, I don't like it, but I understand why you have to do it, and she was in complete support of it. So we did reach out to labor just to make sure they know.
This to the board with support.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Moving on to item number two, speaking of LLAD.
Keep going.
Preparation of the engineering report for LLAD.
Okay, so every year we have to do a LLAD engineering report. It's a requirement, and this will be very similar to what we have done last year. We've retained, or we'd like to retain, the services from SCI. They are very familiar with the LLADs and the nuances of each, because we have several different variations on a theme with the LLADs. For example, Eastwood is the one with the we have Northview and Eastwood with parks. Some LLADs are nothing but streetlights. And so with that nuance, it behooves us. And SCI is very well regarded by the county. You cannot over or underestimate the value of that. Mm-hmm. And so the engineer report, what they do is they we start off with a budgeting exercise that staff here, myself primarily, goes through. And we say this is the amount of projects that we anticipate to do in the course of the next year within the LLADs. We have to look at their finances. How much money do they have in their fund? We have some that are underfunded, and so we have to look at adjusting services there. But SCI will go out. They are the engineering firm of record. On page three, you'll see the schedule. It's doable. We did it last year. They will just make sure that the report that will be brought to the board, there's typically a preliminary report, and then there's a final engineer's report where we set the amount to be levied, and that amount goes to the county, to the auditor controller, and when that is approved, that is the amount that they will pay on their property taxes. It's something that needs to be done by a third party. It can't be done necessarily in-house, although it is supported by in-house personnel. I think you've all, well, I don't know, Director Gilchrist, have you been around with the, yeah, you,
okay. Just for the last one.
Can we do anything about the underfunded in this go-round?
Well, the only thing that we can really do is, and unfortunately, we have to look for ways to save money. And that would typically be, and the challenge will mostly be with Dave West, Crazy Horse LLAD, because we operate an athletic field there that gets a lot of use starting last weekend. Well, opening day for baseball. I am in discussions with the Little League telling them that, look, this park is a challenge, and they keep asking for more, and I say, well, there's no more there because there's no money there. So we're looking at trying to get some more labor out of them on volunteer hours to take care of things. The only way to really improve the funding of these LLADs is they would have to go through a Prop 218 type exercise, and that is something that would be out of the scope of this.
And that would be in not this election year, in 2 years
from now? It would be in the following election.
And what is the role of the CSD in that?
In the election?
Yeah.
Our only responsibility is really kind of maintaining that and enforcing the CC&R separately.
Right.
But that's really our role in that component.
So what they do or don't do about fundraising funds is?
Yes.
So we just tell them we're going to cut services and they can choose to.
Correct.
Okay.
If they want to go out after an increase, they have to be the initiator, not us. We can simply inform them. I will tell you that we need to do a complete revamp.
We can inform them sooner than
100%.
Later.
We need to do that. What we need to really do is reformat our entire LLAD system. It's just been something that's been there for a while. We kind of manage the whole thing right now. We want to get out of that management business. We really need to have civilian self-management, if you will. So there should be a committee from the homeowners for each one of these LLADs, and they meet every year, and then staff will work with them in coordinating to say, hey, this is your budget for the year. They request, these are the things we want done. This is what we want long-term planning. And then they are well aware of how much money they have or how much money they don't have. So I think that will go a long ways when it comes time to ask for additional funding. As it stands today, we tell them, oh, there's not enough funding, and they have to make a decision. But nobody's been involved in all these years, so they have no clue. If you have a civilian committee for each one of these and they manage it, they know exactly what they have and don't have, and so it won't be a surprise when we say, hey, we need to increase your assessment. Then they have the information and they're armed, ready to go out and talk to all their neighbors and say, hey, we've been dealing with this for years. We don't have enough funding, so either we have to assess ourselves more or we have to cut services, and it gets it off of us being the bad guys, because I don't know how we got into the position, but we want to get out of it.
Yeah. Do any of them have existing committees?
None of them. We're going to have to set all those up. None of them.
Yeah, none.
You know, and a lot of these LLADs were done at a time, and of course, you know, Prop 13 and all that related stuff kind of really put an impact on it. But most of these do not have a economic cost of living adjustment. There's not an accelerator. Some of the newer ones, post Prop 13, they put those into them where you can go up X percent a year. A lot of the older ones, they do not have that.
We should, and it's tough now because it's citizens, but I have to vote that in, right? And then unfortunately, there was no inflationary factor built in. So as we do these, anytime somebody does go back to open it up again, we should request that they do that. Or we go to all of them once we establish the committees and show them the why. Then I think we put an automatic escalator in.
I'm pretty sure mine has an escalator in it. I feel like it does.
I don't think any of them do. Do they?
No, a couple of the newer ones.
The newer ones.
Silver Springs, I believe, does.
Gotcha.
Because everybody's learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah.
But to Mo's point, it's important that we get in front of this because a neighbor of ours started cutting off water and services without letting the members of the LLAD know it. And all of a sudden, everything started to die. And they came, and so it's, let's learn from their mistakes. Let's get out in front 100%. Of it. Here's the reality. We're not an open book. Here's what you've got. And here's what it costs us to maintain these assets.
I have a funny question. My son's girlfriend is a chemical engineer who does air quality and stuff. What kind of an engineer does an LL, lighting district assessment? Is it electrical engineer?
Civil
engineer?
Typically civil engineering.
Okay, all right.
So you are asking for us to send to the board the agreement for $25,025. That is part of next year's budget.
Correct.
Yes.
But we'd all, just so we understand how we got you, because I know it'll be a question at the full board, is we did not go out to RFP, and we'd indicated that we would not be going for this one. And for the reasons Mark mentioned earlier, especially the familiarity with the county, because they approve these as well, because they're the ones that collect. But we also have the caveat in our purchasing policy for engineering studies that they do not have to go out to RFP. That's, you know, we're allowed to do that with engineering services specifically, which this falls under. So.
And I've noticed in the check register that we just paid about $7,500.
For?
To SCI.
Yes.
So I'm guessing it was the January payment for last year.
Correct. Yep.
So, yes. And it was around the same amount of money as this one. So I'm guessing it didn't go up that much.
No, they've not indicated it was going to go up. They've been pretty steady on their costs. Okay.
No, nothing on that. Thank you.
Public comment on LLAD?
Yeah, Vicki Jacobs, just a question. Are we subsidizing anybody currently?
Yes.
Yes.
To what amount?
I can get that information for you. It's I literally sitting on my desk over there. I'm sorry I didn't bring it, but we are. It's I couldn't even really guesstimate it. I just looked at it briefly before I came in here, but I'll grab that and I'll make sure I have it for the full board meeting, so you know.
Yeah, because someone will probably.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those areas that hasn't been focused on in a number of years. And so a couple things. One is we haven't focused on that in a number of years on what the agency is augmenting. And secondarily to that, we also have not been requesting reimbursement. So you'll remember several months ago we requested that. It was about $700,000. Yeah. We end up getting the funding back. So we'll stay on top of that now, one. And two is this is all part of revamping that entire system. Let us get a handle on exactly where we're at. We need to make sure that we're allocating time where we should be. We weren't allocating, for instance, the maintenance worker two that is specific to one of the LLADs. That's his job. We weren't allocating healthcare. It was just his salary. Well, healthcare is pretty significant.
Yeah.
So things like that, we definitely need to clean it up, but we have it on the list. It's a high priority. It's just going to take some time to unravel what has happened and then come up with a new program.
As someone who was new, you know, a couple years ago now to this, when I started figuring out what this was about, it strikes me in this Byzantine, horrible way to handle this. And I realize not everybody here set this up, but just the whole concept of, you know, all these multiple little...
Oh, it's unreal.
And trying to just manage all of that and the money and the... It's crazy.
And don't we spend the money for labor, materials, or energy and get reimbursed? Is that the way it works?
We're
paying it out of budget.
Right.
And then we get reimbursed?
Then, yes.
So, and how much? What's the time frame on that?
It's whenever we ask for it. So that's what I was saying earlier is we hadn't asked for it for almost 2 years. And so you're close to $700,000-$800,000 behind. Well, that's why your budget goes down is you got to request those funds. But the funds also have to be available.
So when is a logical time to request those funds?
I think, Laura, we're going to start requesting that more frequently. It's not a one lump sum. You ask, you can, I think EDH is doing it as they were spending, right?
Yeah.
And so we need to go to a model where we're not bankrolling it, you know, on behalf of the LLADs.
Sure. Yeah.
If we spend something that very next month, we should be requesting it, or maybe we do it quarterly.
Okay.
We're going to look at a better system that way to do it. But
at least minimum quarterly.
But we also have to remember it's when the county collects those funds.
Oh,
so if they haven't got them, then we have to wait till they've collected
them. So it's the property tax time.
So it appears on your property tax roll.
Okay.
It's one of those line items that everybody kind of looks right over.
Exactly.
Myself included.
Can you submit the request anyway, and they hold on to it until there's money?
Well, they'll hold on to it until there's money, or you have to know. So we do get reports from the county on what's the fund balance of all these LLADs. Of course, we have to rationalize that against what we expect to be paid. But then when there's enough there, then say, we'd like these monies to pay. And we tell them, obviously, what was done in each of the LLADs. It's and like I said, there's several that are just lights. Those are easy. Here's a PG&E bill. We pay it.
Yeah.
We'd like to reimburse. But some of it gets into where we take care of a ball field or we take care of Eastwood Park or something else. So it's a little bit more detail getting those funds back.
Yeah.
Sean?
Great questions.
Yeah.
I love it.
Sean Collis. As far as like how you guys allocate for these LLADs, for the timesheets, these guys actually have different charge codes for each one.
Mm-hmm.
So then it shouldn't be too difficult. It's just time consuming.
So you have the humanistic part of it, and so it's making sure that they're allocating their time. It's easy to come up with a policy and say you shall, but just making sure they do it. It's I wouldn't say it's 100% accurate because you're gonna have time punches and things like that. I think it is important that they're using their phones and things like that. We provide them a phone, and that's how they allocate their time.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're getting a lot
even I, in my current role, allocate my time. If I go into an LLAD, like when I was doing all sorts of irrigation work, if I was out Dave West, then I would allocate that time to Dave West.
Gotcha. And it's just to, let's say, Dave West. You don't break it down to like a subcategory, like doing irrigation, then lights, then something else?
I spent X number of hours at this LLAD during this day or week.
Yeah.
It's done by the day, by the way.
Great question. Man, this is awesome.
So how are you going to allocate the new landscaping contract?
So we are getting cost breakdown for each of those parks. And then whatever goes to Eastwood will go into that LLAD.
And then I had a question in the check register area, but it's about LLADs.
I like the tie.
There you go.
$13,000 check to PG&E for 1 month of electric.
I assume that even though that's just one line item in the check register, that it is being allocated separately.
We get separate bills for all of them.
Okay.
So so the PG&E bill might come across this way, but every single LLAD we get a different bill. For this building, we get a different bill. We get two for this.
So you're just adding those all up.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
All right. That's a pretty big bill if it's only for one.
Oh, yeah. Well, we pay a lot of money per year, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And that's with solar.
Anything else?
Nothing for me.
So, action is you want to move this to the board for support.
Yes. That works.
To the board with support.
And we had the one question about are we subsidizing any of them?
Yeah, and I'll make sure we bring that. Perfect.
I got the note right here.
we'll bring that to them.
Or how much and how many, I guess.
Yes. And that actually is in the monthly reports that Ken does for us. That's in the monthly finance report. Right. So the PowerPoint that he shows, all the LLEDs are always on there with their about their over or under on there as well.
Yeah. I'm glad we're asking these questions in so many places.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
All about transparency.
Okay. All right. And moving on to item number 3, cash handling policy.
Can I have my agenda packet back, sir?
Oh, the one I stole from you? Sorry.
<Thank> you. If you don't mind. Okay, cash handling policy. So we are, as we expand our operations and doing different things.
Did we have something already?
We had a one page, and so indicated in here, and it really wasn't a cash handling policy. When I looked at it, I looked it up, and I go, well, one, that doesn't even have a title, and it was just 3200, which is a section.
Yes, right.
And for whatever reason, that is what was in there. So we are moving to strike that one. If you were to, let's see. If you go to the back, you will see that number. I thought we put that one in there.
It's 3200. There we go.
Yeah, so you see page on 19 is the page. That is all we had for cash handling. And 19 is just says series 3000 for operations. So it's quasi technically not a policy. It's a part of a series. And so this is to clean that up.
We only talk about like department heads do.
Exactly. So this will replace that. And we will work on the... some of the formatting on this one, I see a couple formatting issues, and we'll put this in the actual policy format. But at any rate, with Summer Spectacular, with the concession stand, with ActiveNet coming on board, and what we do here, we have cash packets in different places. We're moving money between different places, and so we just need to have a better handle on what's the process, and how do you set a till up, and how do you end for the day and lock everything out and reconcile everything? Where do we store the cash? You know, coming back here to Laura in the safe. How do you make change and all of those kind of things? And so Summer Spectacular was really the big one, and we tested this out last Summer Spectacular. Remember, we did a temporary policy, and it worked out really, really good. We actually had armed security guards, a whole nine yards, because it was so remote from our main operation. Yeah. So that's really the crux of what this policy is. The other one will go away. This talks about accounting, the department heads and what they do, the actual cash handling, security and audits, cash drawers, cash boxes and envelopes. That's a big one. One of the no-nos that we were doing that we just recently stopped was putting the cash pouch out in the open in the gym for pickleball. That's not, you should know that, so you know that, right? So that eliminates that piece. And so now everybody from pickleball and others, they check in. And so when they check in, they pay at the cashier spot, but all of that is tracked in the computer. Everything's locked in there. Segregation of duties, daily reconciliation in the cash journals and documentation, all of that is clean. This is also to avoid having this as a finding in an audit, which we haven't. But we definitely needed to have a cash handling policy.
So is there training for all staff on this?
Yes. Yeah. And Laura's been really, really good about that. And Laura did a lot of the heavy lift on developing this policy based on what we've done in the past, what's worked, what's not worked. And so that's what you have in front of you. So she did a really good job in dialing this in for us. I'll take any questions that you might have.
So you know what I do for a living. So I have, funkiness with formatting.
Yeah, the formatting will be cleaned up for sure. Yes.
So, yeah, please do that. I think you maybe need to break it out into, like, numbered sections and such.
Okay.
Your letter that accompanied policy states that it applies to volunteers who participate. However, there is no section for volunteers in the roles and responsibilities.
Let's take a look. We might have incorporated them under the cash handling employees. But we can clarify that.
Yeah. And
yep, absolutely. And that's, again, some are spectacular. Obviously, there are volunteers doing that. And then we might have volunteers from the pool teams or the swim teams that are running the concession stand. So I'll make sure I add that in there.
And then, questions that are in the check register. But would this be the policy? Maybe this is more of a question for Sean. Would this be the policy where we would add our merchant fees that we want to start charging back?
That's a separate policy. Yeah. Okay. In fact, that's already done. That's in our book of fees that we adopted recently. So those merchant fees are already baked in there. It allows us to do that and spells out what we can charge in there.
We'll still need a policy that states that we do that.
Let me look and see, make sure we don't have something like that. But if we don't, we will bring it back.
It's been right here on the item for future meetings.
That was for return checks, I thought. Okay. If we don't, if you guys are good, can we just bring that directly to the full board if you're good with that? Okay. We'll just do that, and we'll bring it this next board meeting. We'll whip that out, and we'll have that for this next board meeting.
In the parks and rec area, it's a huge lump sum.
Okay, we will get that done.
I'm assuming that the other huge lump sum at the parking box is being covered. It's being covered by the 50 cents.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what we did. And so we'll have to do that. We looked at the concession stand. It was a great conversation yesterday, actually. We talked about passing on the fees there as well. The challenge is it makes it extremely problematic with creating change.
Passing on the fees to the client, whoever uses the card, a credit card.
Okay,
just like everywhere else. Okay, very good.
But the problem is in a concession stand, it's so easy. Here's $5. Here's a dollar change versus actually change. We could, but we'll have to see what we're actually spending on merchant fees. And maybe that's the route we have to go on that one, but we're still evaluating that one a little bit.
So many people don't carry cash.
I will tell you, this weekend we were open for 2 days, and I want to say 65% to 70% were credit cards.
Yeah.
Apple Pay was a really big one. Everybody's using their phone. Credit cards to tap and go, and it literally takes 3 seconds to do a transaction. I won't say hardly anybody. Most people didn't use cash.
So we just build it into our price of the.
That's what we've been doing. Yes, that's exactly what we've been doing.
So we get billed back the credit card charge. Is that what you're saying, really?
Yeah. So it's pre-bill. So we use Square Up, and so the way it works is they charge a fee, and it's listed on there. So what happens is it goes to their account, and they transfer an amount minus the processing fee to our account.
What percentage is it typically?
I think it's 3% plus 15 cents or something like that.
Yeah.
So they're all a little bit different.
It's just how much putting the time and the effort into it for simplicity,
But it doesn't sound like a lot. I guess if you're doing a few transactions, it's not a lot. But when you do the volume that we do, it's massive.
It's $1,100 for parks.
For just parks.
One month.
Yeah.
Yes. Really?
Yeah.
Yes. But we added the 50 cents. We were going to go
that
five.
That was the park.
We do a lot of program sales through that. Yeah.
Oh, we added that? Okay.
Yeah.
So if you're paying with a credit card for a class, you're being charged for it here currently?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's become the norm no matter where you go now.
They want tips on top of that typically.
Yeah.
And anything else from you?
How to reconcile, just in a simplistic way, how do you reconcile? What is the process? You have all this money from the store, wherever it would be. Is the next day it's given to Laura? What happens?
It's a great question. Laura's got a couple different ways. With The concession stand check and stand is really, really easy because Square's got so many reporting features. So it's got a drawer feature so it knows that this is what we started with. These are all the sales. This is what should be in the drawer totally with the, what does she call the initial?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. She's got a term she calls it. I'm drawing a blank on it right now. But that's what we start off with minus that. Those should equal. So either if it's over, then you know that you know there's additional funds. And that might be a tip because a lot of people are doing that, but we're not separating the tip out of the till into like a jar or anything. They just say, hey, here's it was $3, here's $5, just keep that, and then they just mark that down. That's how she's doing it. So she'll take that Square report, and that's how she reconciles it. For ActiveNet, which we're going live.
Manana.
Spoiler alert.
you asked.
same kind of tools. They've got the reporting, and so we'll be able to look at what the till says. I will tell you today, it's paper. And so we just write in, okay, this is what we started with, and this is the closing, and then we reconcile that way. I'm not proud of it, but the pouch in the gym, it was never really reconciled, so we don't know what we've lost because it's hard to tell. You know, who is a resident, who's not a resident, who's an annual pass holder. That was pretty cloudy and all of that. So with a new system, that is being captured.
Yeah. So let's assume Laura's sick. Is there like a locked cash box or receipts? And there's a fresh new one for the employee takes over the next day?
We've got duplication.
Yeah. Oh,
duplication. So we have Haley, who's also in the office. She can do that. Okay. And then also we also have Aaron, who will be trained up to assist in that as well. So we've got lots of duplication.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay. Anything else?
That's all. Right. Thank you.
Public comment. All right. So we will clean up the thing.
Formatting. And I'm going to add the merchant field. That will be another one, but we'll add the volunteer piece. Correct.
Fix the volunteers.
Yes.
And move to the board with support.
Yes.
Woo-hoo. Okay. So moving on to... policy 1050, public records policy.
Yeah, this one is very simple. You can see this is the redline version. There was a couple things that we were just out of compliance, and they were just cleanup items, especially since we passed our new book of fees. And so this is just to come into compliance with that minor changes. Oh, okay.
Yellow part that's all
X'd
out. Is that basically what's up here?
Yes. It was changed.
So really all you're changing in the cost. I thought there was something that the law changed that we needed to also include. But I'm gonna guess you ran this by the most recent.
This was updated by our board clerk. She's up to speed on all the laws and all that stuff for sure.
I didn't get it actually, the updated one. I just, okay, oh, that's it, okay.
It looks like it's just updating.
Yeah.
What, how do we keep track of when we have a public records request? And is that something shared with the board?
No, it's not shared with the board. We handle that as it's just operations as part of what staff does. And so it comes into the CPCSD mailbox. Aaron knows, you know, where those go. So that goes to the general manager and it goes to the board clerk. Board clerk is our records officer, if you will. And so she's the one that tracks everything on a tracker. And then she'll also respond automatically that states that, you know, we received your public records request and this is the time frame, and then it gets sent to the appropriate staff member to actually do the work. It goes back to the board clerk, and then the board clerk will send it back to the individual.
So let's say we have a real contentious item, and I'm curious, can she or the general manager tell me how many we had or the nature of it, or how much of it is public, how much is confidential?
It's all public. So if the board member wants to request, you know, how many public records requests do we have open right now, you can certainly do that.
Okay.
Typically, I mean, you only have so many days, right? So typically we don't have a bunch that are open.
Right.
That just depends on the time that it takes for staff to do the work. Now, there might be some back and forth If they come in and they're too broad, we have the ability to let the individual know that you need to narrow this down. And so that gives more time, or takes more time, I should say. This is a massive, massive upgrade from where we were, as you guys remember. As everybody remembers.
Brad can be here.
Where is Brad tonight?
But doesn't begin to express it.
Exactly. But we track everything, and it also has the date that we responded, and she tracks everything, and then also the date that it's due. And so we're all reminding each other. So if it has something to do with purchasing, and we had one recently.
We just had one last week.
They want to know about all of our park fiber and those kind of things. That goes to Mark. Mark does the research. It goes back to Aaron, and then it gets sent out. We don't like multiple different staff members responding, because we want to make sure it's a consistent message and everything is caught, so we're abiding by the intent of the
PR. Is that something typically a general manager would share with the board?
Not really. I would say that if it's something that could potentially be a legal issue, yes. Mm-hmm. And so we have done that. We've done that with some of the flooding issues. We've done that with a couple other things that have come across. But on a just a pure regular basis, no, we haven't, because we I don't think you'd want all that information.
No, I'm not asking you either.
We literally get them all the time. And so the fire department gets a bunch of them. They get them just because people want to investigate a property or an inspection on the property, or did it have any mitigation issues or anything like that. So we get a ton of those. If they're going to buy a piece of property, we get a ton of those. And so none of them really are anything directly with us. We got one yesterday. They want to know all of our employees' names, their emails, and do they have purchasing authority and those kind of things. And I'm like, okay, that's random. You got to narrow
that's
this
fishing.
Down. Exactly.
Yeah, it seems a little too broad.
We get a ton of them. They come in.
So that they can...
Yes.
They hit our neighbors on a quarterly basis, and they just are updating their records. Mm-hmm. But they do it through a PRA.
We'll get them annual salary requests, benefits, and those kind of things.
Can
we'll get
we
those.
Tell them they have no purchasing authority? You don't need to know their phone number and email?
Yeah, and that's what we'll do is, we're reviewing that one right now. Just basically we'll narrow it down and say it's the general manager, and it might be the parks and facilities supervisor. That's what we'll narrow it down to. Here they are.
Yeah. And Galileo gets picked on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking you'd want to protect the privacy of our employees.
Oh, 100%.
And that's just it.
Yeah, 100%. And we're, Mickey's all over that. She doesn't give any personal information out. But we do, if they're really, really broad, she's really good about talking to the general manager about, hey, how do we want to respond to this? And I'll tell her, I go, there's no way. That would take us weeks and months to get all of that information. We had one that came in for, it was the pool. They want to know all of our fees for the pools, what it costs to run the pool, the teams and all those. And it was, at the time, we didn't have that information, so we had to create that information, which was not required. If you have to create something, you don't know. But it was a good exercise for us, because the public was asking for that information anyway, so we said, let's do it. She did. She did. And we did it.
We won't report.
She actually did ask for that. That's funny.
Anything else? Remember?
That's all we have. Thank you.
Okay, public comment on the policy for public records. Moving on to item number 5, a verbal update on Brighton Electric.
Yeah, so this will be real brief. Still working through that.
There's nothing in writing here.
Just
verbal.
This is just verbal.
Okay.
And so this has been something that's been asked for a very long time. And just on my spare time, I'm trying to find time to just kind of do that. So that's what I've been doing. We were able to go back and look at everything, all of our bills. We were able to do a deep dive in what we're actually producing, and then what our charges are. We had to go back and find a year where we had our baseline year is what we call it, because you have to go back to a year that we didn't have solar to know what the cost would have been in a baseline. But the challenge is we were bumping right up against COVID. So obviously nobody was here, so that's a horrible baseline to use because the power consumption was way, way down.
Sure.
So we did find a year. I think we're using 18, 19. But we had to go back and in the files, and there is about 100 boxes in there to move stuff around, find the physical PG&E bills, scanned them all.
PG&E couldn't give that to you?
No, they only go back so many years. Trust me, I tried. That's the first thing I did. Thank you very much, Sid.
Yeah, the record retention policy.
No, oh, boy.
It was impossible to go back that far. So we scanned everything in, and we're starting to do the analysis on what that's going to be. So more to come on that one. It's just going to take a little time to get that project done.
Well, you've had so many price increases.
Well, you have to account for that too. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
The other, I will tell you that I am comfortable with the power that we're producing. The panels are producing what they say they're going to produce. And it's a lot. It's like 196 kilowatt hour. It's massive.
And both here in the fire station?
Here in the fire. No, just here.
Here.
What about fire station?
The fire station is about 82. So when you look at a standard home, I look at mine. Mine's 12. And 12 is a really, really big system.
Yeah.
A standard home is like 6.5. We're 196 here. So it's a massive system. But I think when I looked at that versus what the charge is, and I started looking at some of the PG&E bills, it looks to be either we're break even or we're to the positive by 1,000 or two. So it's not as bad as I think a lot of people want it, but I'm just doing some verifying of the numbers before I say, hey, here's the report.
So we have a lease.
Yes.
Plus we're paying for the power we use beyond what the solar produces.
Yes. So okay. As you can imagine, finally, you know, we're getting some sun. The panels are going to produce really good. Our bills are going to significantly drop to PG&E because we're producing so much, but you still have your regular payment to Brighton. You're always going to pay that. But our bill's going to go way down. In the wintertime, we're not producing, so your bills are going to go up. That's where you see the $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 bills because it's just not producing, so you are paying direct for that one.
And the interest rate, and we always had that. I know I asked that conversation before. We looked at purchasing.
We looked at purchasing it.
And what was your thought on that?
That's 100% part of the analysis. I did the initial, and it's saying don't even look at that for another 5 to 7 years because I think it was 2020, 2021, that was the initial start, and so you're too close into it. It wouldn't make sense. However, the analysis does talk about providing ways or finding ways to capture and keep more of the power. So I start talking to PG&E. There's an SJIP. It's a self-generation incentive program. I have it. It actually is not a scam, and it works. I got $30,000 worth of batteries, and it cost me $3,000, $4,000. That was it. And so they do have that for commercial. It wasn't funded last year. It sounds like, or the funding ran out. It sounds like there is funding again. So this new PG&E rep, we're working on what that would look like for us to have batteries installed here. There'll be a small cost because there's they'll only cover, it was 30%. I think it might be down to 26%. They keep extending it, but even at 26%, that's huge. And so we need to kind of capture that. So if we can capture more power, what that allows you to do is the battery. So like at home, during the day, it fills the batteries and then it starts sending it back to PG&E and they pay us. And, we're NIMS 2, so it's a higher rate. So they pay. And then when about 5:30-ish, you're not producing as much. It starts to go down. The home starts pulling off the batteries. And it goes all the way to the night. Now you get down like 25% by the next morning. And then the sun's out again and you're charging. So you're not pulling off the grid hardly ever.
What's that called?
It's just how the batteries work. That's just how the batteries
work.
Oh, SGIP, Self-Generation Incentive Program. And I did it 2 years ago, and I thought it was a scam. I called one of the PG&E reps, and he goes, no, that's a real deal. And I go, no way. And so I did it. It was pretty quick, and a check came in the mail for there was two batteries. You have to front the money. I fronted it. It was $30,000, and they sent a check for $26,800. I'm like, huh.
Who sent the check?
PG&E. It was direct from PG&E. It was a real deal, so yes. And if you have PSPS events, which clearly we do, and we're an essential services building, we have that generator. That's a whole other contract we talked about at the last board meeting. This is all going to be tied together. So they're looking for a way to get a backup generator that we own and have here. In addition to having the batteries, that would be good if we're able to jump on that.
So I didn't understand. Did you look at Station 89 or not?
I have not done a deep dive. I only focused here. 89 will be the next.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, it would be nice if it's a break-even situation there.
I'm guessing it might be. We might be more to the positive. I'll have to take a look at that and see what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. I've been one of the annoying people asking that.
No, everybody's been asking it. It's just trying to find time to do it, understand it, and get a baseline. And you have to have a calculation in there because there has been raises and there'll continue to be raises. But our rate is 0.0196. for what we're paying per kilowatt hour, so that stays the same for us. And so you're paid a little bit more now, but I think as PG&E continues to go up, it's going to be more valuable to us because our rate's still going to be here. So the rates will do this, but what we're paying to Brighton is going to just stay flat.
Where is the electricity primarily used in this facility? Is there one place more than the other?
I don't think we can't do a deep dive.
You can't even break that down.
I mean, this is a big facility, so HVAC obviously is going to be a big draw.
We consume a lot over in the gym just because of the volume of air that it has to cool heat. Here, not so much because we control it. But
do these rooms have motion detectors?
They do. Everybody turns them off all the time, which is a pet peeve of mine. Like, it's a motion detector, leave it alone. Just let it do its job.
So it's more the heating and the air is what you think?
I think those are the energy ones.
Yeah.
The pump, obviously, for the pool, because the pool runs
all the time.
So the pump, and it's a big pump, so I know that's a big draw. The heater is for the pool is electric start gas. So that's not a
not
big,
much.
But those are your big ones. The lighting, you know, I think we've done a really good job on LED, so the lighting has gone down. Everything's LED out there now as well. So I think it's just the heating air is going to be a big one for us.
Somebody had mentioned who seemed pretty knowledgeable about the lighting in the gym is kind of old school. I don't know whether they've ever been updated.
Yeah, the challenges with those is you just don't have LEDs that powerful for a big space.
Really?
Like
okay,
that.
That's
without
true.
Adding yeah. a bunch more.
So you got what you got.
A lot
okay,
of
I can't remember your name. Nickel okay. metal hydride or something like that for those lights. Those are the lights you need in that big building.
But everywhere else we've been pretty efficient with the lighting.
Quite very efficient.
Okay, thank you for that. That's all I had.
Public comment.
Sean Collis. Just want to say I also did the SGIP. I thought it was a scam, but two batteries, and I actually found a contractor that was willing to front me the money, so we basically didn't pay anything until they got funded.
That's nice.
About a year for us.
Yes, same.
So, I mean, it's a first come, first serve, so if you guys are going to go that route, I'd say do it sooner rather than later. Just my 2 cents on that.
And it's been around for a while.
Yeah. And then you can also set batteries to, like, draw at a specific time, so outside of peak hours. And then, you know, fill up during, like, in the early morning when there's more sun. So it's a really good system. I definitely recommend you guys at least look into it.
100%. And even if you have, like, an EV, I've got an EV, and just getting used to how that works with the system, I have it to where it doesn't hammer the batteries because it pulls pretty hard, and it pulls more than what the batteries can put out. So you're pulling from the grid and the batteries at the same time. So I've got it now where I just dial the back. It drops it below, and it doesn't hammer the batteries as hard. And I can even set the different times that it charges or it pulls. I might set it to only pull when there's solar's being generated or sun, you know. So it works out really, really good.
Vicky, anything? Nope. Okay, bring it back. There's no action.
No action. We will have
this was the verbal.
We'll have a full presentation for you, though.
A wonderful verbal.
That will not be in March, though.
Moving on to Director Scobie resolution.
Did I skip one? I did. There it is right there. This is just a swag at a resolution. We wanted to bring one. Typically, we just write it. We bring it to the board. That's the first time you've ever seen it was at the board meeting. And so we did it a little bit different this time. We're going to run it through you guys to kind of get your thoughts. I think it's absolutely appropriate, and we should be acknowledging, you know, folks that have given so much time to our community and to the district. Monique has been one of those rock star board members. She's been a historian. Any time we've had something, I've called her, hey, have we had this before? Oh, yeah, we had this. This is what we did last time. And she's been absolutely amazing, completely dedicated, done a ton for this community. So this was just a resolution to appreciate her, much like we did Chief Blankenheim. And I think it's certainly appropriate. So if you guys are good, we'll put this in a nice frame. We'll get her to come back to a meeting and we'll present it to her unless you have changes.
So I think it's a really nice thing to do, but I'm wondering if we're setting a precedent.
We are setting a precedent.
Are you going to do this for every single director that leaves the board? So at the end of this year, we'll do three of them.
100%.
Okay.
And that's absolutely appropriate. And in public service, that is absolutely the standard. Yes.
Okay. Do we need a policy or something that says that we do this?
I don't think
so. So that when Mo leaves, we don't forget.
I get where you're going. Yes. You know, let me chew on that one and see where the best place to put that. That might be in the board clerk's world. That might be something that she has because she does all the onboarding and the offboarding. So that might be the most appropriate, but we'll see if a policy is needed for that one.
Okay.
Good question. Love that.
No, I think it's very appropriate. Thank you for
public
that.
Public comment?
Yeah.
All right. Moving on to item... Oh, do we... So,
we'll just... Yeah, we'll bring it to the board with support of...
Okay. Moving on to item 7, administrative services coordinator job description.
So... This is just for discussion, and so again, for transparency and to bring things to you, we're not asking for approval. A number of months ago, the board asked me to look into, reorganization, cost-saving measures, look at the organization and what can we do differently, and so we've been doing that with Mark, myself, along with Laura, and just kind of looking at the business. We have some old school, or I'll call them legacy positions that are there. And so you're going to see receptionist is one of those. Receptionist is a very old school term, and it's really just the person that answers the phone. But even in today's world, receptionist just isn't used that much. It's purely only the phones and transferring. That is it. Where we're at is they do far, far more. We use them for far, far more. So as a standard practice, you analyze what the employee is doing, and you see if you need to reclass that position based on their duties. That they're actually doing and what their job description says. And so we did review the receptionist position, and you'll remember that we brought to you, we were going to call it resident services at one point. We brought that to you. And then we really took a step back and say, well, what is this position really doing? And it really is administrative services, kind of the coordinator role. And so the purpose and intent is to take some of the workload off of the general manager. And so we're in lockstep on this because Mark will need some assistance in some of the administrative side of things because the GM doesn't have that right now. But then more importantly is that front desk is there's so many things that come through there, and that person really is the coordinator. So, we get them all the time. Hey, I see smoke coming from this house. Hang up and dial 911. I mean, you get a ton of those. It's the first thing. Or what about this? Okay, that goes to Mark. What about that? Okay, that goes to the general manager. What about this? That goes to accounting. So that's kind of your orchestrator up there, and that's what they do. They also back up. We want them to back up our board clerk. So if our board clerk is sick or on vacation, we have struggled with posting things on time because only one person had the ability to post. So this will be the backup plan for posting. And when we have really big board packets, this will be the person that assists with getting the full board packet. Maybe they separate it and they do portions, so we're not having so much overtime on the board clerk and getting that done. So we have that. Or mistakes are made. You can have, Aaron would be here, or this position will be here to repost if we need to repost. So we can do that as opposed to the board clerk coming in, because the board clerk's part-time. So the board clerk will have to come in and post because that's the only person that can post right now. So that is what we looked at in this position. There's a lot of things that they will be doing. I think when you look at the job description that's right behind it, monitoring the district voicemails, like I said, that's the person that all the complaints that come in on different things or something happened at the lake. Okay, that needs to go to parks. That needs to go here. That person does that. Assist the general manager, which with preparation and posting a board committee meeting agendas, that is probably going to be the biggest help because right now the GM just kind of does it. And it's a lot of work. But having somebody say, hey, can you review this for me? And I use everybody right now. So I give Mark a document. I'll give Laura a document. Hey, review this. And then we bring it to you guys, and we try to catch everything. Coordinate insurance-related matters and processing the claim. So there's some gaps that we have in the service, and we needed to elevate this position because we couldn't have the receptionist who's in the position do those duties because they're well outside of her job description, and that wouldn't be fair to her, and we'd have a union violation there. We didn't want to do that. This position already, and again, is probably out of scope, but they assist both the CCNR officer as well as the wildfire risk mitigation officer and helping them process some of the inspections and things that are coming, their documentation. She assists with all of those kind of things.
That was one of my questions, uh-huh. Because in this bullet point, mm-hmm. It does not have anything about CCNR. It just says weed and rubbish abatement and wildfire risk.
Yes, yeah, so look at the updated one I gave you. Okay. And I did make some modifications to that one.
Okay.
And there's some copies in the back there. And I thought I did put that in, but if I didn't, I will make sure that that is clear. I think I did put that in there.
I read it somewhere.
I read it a bunch of times.
Support the CCNR officer.
Yes.
Right, but where?
It was in his letter, not in the job.
Oh, okay. I read it somewhere.
Was in the staff report?
I will reread through this,
yeah,
Katie.
Yeah, it was in the staff report,
okay.
Not in the actual job.
I'll make sure it gets in the job description. But that's absolutely the intent, because she does that now. And that would be nice to continue doing that. And in addition to, I know she right now that position also is quasi our webmaster, if you will. So any new forms, any new pages, she worked a lot with the fire department in redoing their page, and so those would be some of those duties as well.
Book of fees
is instrumental in that one. And then also any facility rentals, she's kind of the expert on all of that, knows all the facilities, the application, and so this just professionalizes the position. It brings it to what it should be. We're not talking about pay on here because we're still looking at all of that. But I will tell you that the full proposal, when we're done, will probably have a pretty significant reduction from the budget, not an addition. So
I think that organized, prioritized, complete multiple assignments with established timelines, that covers it all.
Yeah.
You're handing a lot of stuff to this person.
Yes.
High-level problem-solving thinking.
Yes.
The salary should be somewhat commensurate with that.
We just that position. There's so many things that we have. If you keep it just a receptionist position, then we really need to take those duties off, and they need to go to somebody else.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to bring this to you as part of a full reorganization to the board.
So I had the CCNR administrator back up. I also am not thrilled with coordinate responses to the Public Records Act request, but I'll come if I have to. Because the board clerk is responsible for governance.
Yes, and the only reason that's in there is to back the board clerk up, and she's also
the steps on her, the board.
But it doesn't, because this position gets them first. Everything comes to this person, and they delegate where those go. So the CPCSD email, that is this position.
But it is not this person's responsibility to make sure they get done. It is the board clerk.
It's the board clerk. I'll look at the language on that one. Yeah. And so I'll look at that.
So she's directing where these things go. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
She's
right.
Reading that.
Yeah.
The PRA and saying, okay,
right.
Like the one we got last week.
Right.
Oh, this is about the bidding process for parks. That goes to Mark.
Fair enough. Okay.
But we will add a line that if the board clerk is not available, this would be the person doing those duties. So I think that's important.
And I like that duplication.
Yes. She's got to go on vacation sometime.
Yeah. So, fair enough.
This doesn't belong in a job description, but I just want to make a comment.
Okay.
I would like to see the district set what I call a service level agreement.
Okay.
When will staff respond to phone calls and emails?
Funny you should mention that.
I will tell you, they don't respond fast enough for my liking.
They don't respond fast enough for my liking either. And I'm guilty of it myself sometimes. I will tell you, we've had a couple. There's been some incidents where at least an individual's not answering the phone. They'll let it go to voicemail, and then they'll call back, and that's not acceptable. And what I told them is my phone number, my cell phone number is published, and people call all the time on it. If the general manager can answer a phone call, and I answer every call unless I'm busy. And if not, even if it's a missed call, I'll call that number back. That is my expectation, and that has been made clear. So if you haven't seen a change, you will see a change as we,
I
think, mark step.
I just think that the district should have a policy that, if you leave us a voicemail, we'll get back to you in the next business day. Or, whatever is.
We will try to get back to you within the next business day.
Exactly.
Yes, I completely agree with
you. But just set an expectation and so that our residents know.
Okay.
I've heard so many complaints on that.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And they
get
don't
it.
Answer to me.
Yeah. Got it.
I send emails and they don't answer me.
Are you talking about me?
No.
Okay. Because they're waiting.
I'm not talking about
Yes. I totally get it. I know exactly where you're going. Let us put that back out. Mark, I'm sure when he takes the reins.
Again, it doesn't belong in a job description.
Yeah.
But I think
but it needs to be in.
But we'll talk expectations, exactly.
Yeah.
Cool.
Otherwise, it'll also stop residents from calling us
after they don't hear back from you.
Understand.
And then I'm just curious, because these are positions that are part of labor, is there any additional language that needs to be in the job description?
No additional language yet, because it just at the top it talks about whether it's an exempt position or non-exempt position. Like this one's a non-exempt position. All non-exempt positions are in the labor group. Any exempt positions not in the labor group, but we are reaching out to labor, and before you know, any approvals, we'll make sure they have all the different positions and all of that.
Is almost the breadth of this job is extraordinary. Is that a problem from a labor point of view?
No.
Move on to this one yet.
Which
one? Hang on, which one?
Well, actually, both. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm the coordinator. I hear you loud and clear.
Yeah. Is that beyond what an employee should be expected to do?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Because it's not like it's everything all the time. These things come in at different times and they prioritize them. The person that's in the role doing it now is doing it very successfully. And so, that would be the intent, is they'd continue to do
that. Well, I think a small organization, we should all multitask.
We have to.
We wear many, many hats.
Yeah, exactly.
So as we go through the full reorganization, when we get to that point, you'll see that, because I think what we've done is we have created an organization organizational structure for a very large organization, which we are not. So the problem is we've got a bunch of supervisors and all these things, and I'm like, that's not working for us. The other thing that was missing is you didn't have a great succession plan, because you had an HR finance officer and you had a general manager. Well, what's in between? Who takes over for the general manager? If you want to do, there's no way to do that. With the operations manager that you approved and we're recruiting for, that now gives us the ability. So when Mark wants to take a vacation or he's sick or something, you have somebody that can step in that role and be the acting general manager. And I think huge. Every fire department, you have a number two. When you're out, that number two covers the business until you get back.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else?
No, that's all
good.
Okay.
Public comment on the administrative services coordinator.
Yeah, hi. Vicki Jacobs again. Are you planning to ask to put this in front of the board at the next board meeting, or is this more just working for the budget?
It depends on, we're working on a bunch of other documents. I think that the whole reorg will be a full conversation with the board. We've talked about it, I want to say probably 3-4 months ago. And this is a direction the board gave me to bring, things back to them.
I don't think we should do it at March's meeting because Don will not be here.
That's true.
So good point.
Yeah.
We should push the full reorg to April's meeting.
Yes.
I know you won't be here, but Mark can
handle it. I'll come back for that
Mark
one.
Mark can handle it.
I appreciate the fact that you're making the job descriptions more encompassing of what they actually do. What impact is that going to have in terms of budget? Because if people have a job description where they're going to be doing a whole lot more than what was in their job description before, the normal expectation is that they're going to get a significant salary increase. And I'm not against that so much as I'm worried about budget always, me.
You and me both. So, like I mentioned earlier, this is part of a more holistic look of the entire organization. These are just parts and pieces. That's why we're not asking for approval of this right now. This is simply, hey, this is what it needs to be. I can tell you that the preliminary calculations we've done, we will be significantly under budget. Or we'll be decreasing.
How is that?
And we'll have to wait until we get everything out. That's part of a much bigger conversation. Yes. So we're looking at all of those things. So, you're right. When we look at all of them, and these are just the first few, but when we look at some of the others and we get those done, you have to look at everything in totality and say, yes, you might be an increase in this job description, but this one might be lower, or this one might be changed. So we are truly looking at consolidating some positions. We're looking at how do we become more efficient. Yes, it's going to be hard, 100%. But I'm also looking at 2030. When our agreement's up with Cal Fire, and we have to start looking at those things.
Right.
So that's what all of this is about. These are just the first two, actually three.
The expectation, always the concern is that everybody's got too much to do. So I'm a little concerned about consolidating things because everybody's got too much to do. So either we decide not to do certain things, which is possible, or you hire very much more skilled people that can handle all of that.
Yes.
Well, and in this particular job case, it's already being done by one person.
Yes.
Well, I'm not the board clerk, I get.
No,
the coordinator.
The coordinator.
Yeah. The coordinator, yeah. Yes. Okay. Aaron's already doing all
yes.
this.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yep. So we'll line that one up.
Of course, can you replace Aaron if she leaves?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
always that's a whole other issue.
It's a whole other issue.
Yeah. But you feel that it is possible, and we know what it is now.
Yeah.
The one person. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned the union, so are you going to be working, I mean, you probably already mentioned that you're going to be working with the union as far as, like, with these jobs.
Yes.
And you're going to also go over, I guess, all the duties, because they're going to have to make sure that it's within scope of their classification.
Yeah, typically they just do a brush. We do the heavy lift, if you will, so we work with HR on this to make sure it's within the job classifications, and we've done that. And so all of these duties are spot on where they should be. And if you look at the administrative coordinator, that is the first tier, if you will. You could come in with a specialist, which is the next, but we're not doing that right now. But the administrative services analyst, which is the next one, that's the position above. And so you have this classification series that you can go to, so you create that succession plan. So from coordinator to analyst, that's where that is. But we will be sitting down with the local, walking the rep through, you know, everything that we do, and then it gets written into the MOU.
All right, moving on to the next one then, administrative services analyst.
Okay.
Step up.
So the analyst, and again, we're not asking for approval on these. I think that's really important because we have people in different positions, and part of a reorganization, sometimes those collapse and they change, right? And so this analyst, administrative services analyst position, is a position that we're looking at. As it stands right now, we've got some accounting. What do we call them? Accounting specialists.
Yep.
In one and two, and then we have an HR/finance officer position, which is open right now. The intent would be to look at an administrative services analyst that can do a lot of those duties and assist with. They wouldn't be in charge of building the budget. They would assist the GM in building the budget, do the analysis, the research, and give information, and then take direction, come back with a report. That's what your administrative analyst would do. So it's not as a high-level position as a HR officer or human resources and finance officer position, but this position is kind of that in-between. But the focus is going to heavily be on the finance side of things. This will also be your intermediate between the auditor or the auditing company and the team. That way we're not having to pay we've got a consultant right now at about $300 an hour. And so that would eliminate the need for that, and that comes to the tune of about $35,000 a year. So that is what the major purpose. The other one is kind of not doing the long-range HR functions. HR and finance are truly incompatible roles. They should be separated. I highly recommend that. In our agency, we don't do that. But what we're doing now is we're using an outside consulting firm that does everything long range or any significant HR issues or recommendations or just a phone call. That's what we use. And then the day-to-day, what I mean by day-to-day might be some of the benefits information or my PERS information or those kind of things that we handle internally. This person would assist with that as well. This is really the big support for, like I said, the general manager. So the analytical and administrative support, assistant preparation, monitoring and administrating the district operating capital budgets. Right now we're using another financial consultant who's assisting with us with that. That consultant would go away. And then this person would take on that role. Reconciling financial records, journal entries and reports. It's nice to have kind of that separation of duty so you can have somebody do the report and you have somebody else reconcile and approve it or send it back.
6:49 p.m.
The heck? Siri is listening to
me. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I
didn't even ask her what time it was.
Those are really the big ones. Coordinate or assist CalPERS with enrollment and compliance and those kind of issues. Research, interpret federal, state, and local regulations. There's a lot of new laws that come out. We just had another one come out about having every supervisor have annual budget training or financial training, which is very similar to the sexual harassment training, the mandates, and those kind of things. Same thing. It's a law, and so all of the staff, the supervisor level who are managing a budget, they're going to have annual track training on budget and finances, which I think is great and
you
needed.
You made me take alcohol for supervisors.
Did I give you the wrong one?
I don't know. I took it.
Okay.
And I'm not sure why. I need to know this, excepting that maybe with the fire guy.
Gotcha. I'll take a look. It might have been. They're so close in there.
How to figure out if you're drunk.
Oh, you definitely didn't get that. You got the wrong one. Yeah. Thank you for doing it, though. You get a certificate.
I do that for the road.
Yeah.
Something similar.
Yeah. So that's what this is. Again, this will be part of a bigger reorganization that we'll be bringing to the board.
So I just have one question. Yeah. You know, the HR piece, we hand that over to a contractor.
Yes.
So in-house things, so I'm not looking at the financial part. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at somebody comes with, I don't know, a medical condition,
yes,
a family situation, uh-huh, harassment situation, those kind of human interactions. How does that work within our system?
Yeah, so in our system currently, the general manager kind of is a catch-all. Uh-huh. Previously, our HR/finance officer did a lot of the HR. But I think we were missing things because we're not the experts. And so bringing on the HR consultant, which was much more fiscally prudent because the rate was significantly lower than obviously having a fully encumbered employee one and two. What we're finding is HR is something that you have to stay on top of. Laws change constantly. Mm-hmm. And I mean constantly. And so we pick up the phone and our HR consultant, this is what it is. Here's a template. Here's that. Make sure you say this. Don't forget that. We're constantly getting those reminders. Mm-hmm. When a new law has changed, she sends us those. And sometimes we have to do a mix, right? And so the high threat situations, we also have our, through our general counsel, through BBK, our law firm, we'll reach out to an HR attorney. And then the HR attorney, we put her in contact with our HR consultant, that we make sure we're all on the same page, both from the legal side of things, but then also on the humanistic side of things, or how we implement something, or how a letter is written, or how we should respond to something, so we have a team environment on that one.
So the first contact would be the GM?
It would be the GM. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
I just want to clarify that.
Yep, 100%.
Okay, thanks.
The only other caveat to this one is because this one will also be a non-exempt, but because of the confidential nature of the things that this person will deal with, I am recommending that we do a full background check on this one. So you'll see that change.
How are you getting away with calling it a non-exempt? They're making a lot of decisions, aren't they?
Because the test, there's an actual test, is it has to do with how much they make, and also has to do with the number of employees that they supervise, and this one won't be, depends on how Mark does it. They might supervise one other person, but probably not more than that.
So they're kind of a specialist.
Yeah, they're the analyst level, but typically analysts, they're not managing people, they're managing projects and things. Good question.
Public comment on the analyst position.
Yeah, where would this analyst fit in your org chart?
It'll be up to Mark. What I'm looking at is their direct report to the general manager because.
And so the facilities manager is on that same level, right?
So the facilities manager, that position is kind of, that's a parks and facilities supervisor. We've talked about that one going away, and it's set to expire on March 22nd.
And then the
operations manager, which we'll be taking on.
And so that one, would that be on the same level as this analyst?
Yeah, so your number two would be the operations manager.
Okay.
But I say a dotted line from the GM would be over to your administrative analyst.
I see.
Because that person, and I've done this down the hill, my CFO reported directly to me because there's so many things that you're doing every single day to put a person in line. You're constantly going back and forth, and it just delays things. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a crosswalk over to. But the operations manager will work closely with the analyst as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trying to
data-driven decisions.
100%.
All right. So moving on along to the board clerk job description.
Floor clerk is a position we already have. This is a less than part-time position, non-exempt position. No change. The salary range is on this one because this is an active employee. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Part of the union?
This is part-time, so no.
No, okay.
Yeah, nope. Part-timers are not covered by the union. But we just added a couple things in this one just to kind of we bolstered it up to meet the new laws. And I'm sorry this is not a red line version because we rewrote the whole thing. But we want to just clean this up a little bit. What happened was before this wasn't called a flat board clerk position. It was called administrative assistant to dash board clerk. And I think when it was created, they go, oh, we need a board clerk. Just use this. Slap board clerk on the end of it, and they threw some board clerk language in there, and that's what they did. This is actually a board clerk job description. And so this meets the intent of the law and the Brown Act and all of that.
She's really made a difference for this organization.
Tell me
She's
about
fantastic.
It. Fantastic. You ain't gonna tell me. But when you put all of the language on there, when you look at the Brown Act records, when you look at the Fair Political Reform Act, those kind of things, that is what she needs to be doing. The reporting or the noticing, when do we have to put something in the newspaper? How long does this have to be out there? What do we, the process to get a new board member on? All of those kind of things. That's your board clerk. The board clerk also works directly with the GM, but a dotted line to the board as well. But I can't tell you how important that position is because that's your historian. She knows this is your records. This is there's everything is. This is resolutions, making sure they're signed, implemented, filed. Anything the board approves, she makes sure that it's uploaded and put into the website and those kind of things. So all of that's really, really important. Budgeting, the budget process. She knows that, hey, budget's coming. I got to put this in the newspaper for this many days. I need to do this. And we forget those things because we're so focused on the budget. And I look up and say, I already did that.
Yeah, all the public notices for resolution or whatever.
Well, 100%. She's on it. We have struggled with that position, I will flat tell you.
We went through so many.
The stress it adds to the GM is off the charts. So, Nikki's back. We got to treat her nice.
We'll be buying lots of lunches.
Treat her nice.
So, comments on this I have is the job description says and serves as secretary to the board.
I will change that. That's incorrect because the GM is
secretary.
Our bylaws and our policies all state the GM.
100%. Yes.
I don't
make a note on that.
I'm looking for it.
Okay.
It's in the first sentence under job description.
Yep, right there.
Oh, got it. If I got to the job description, I would.
I got you.
I was still on the same report. Sorry.
And then.
Thank you.
One bullet point I think to add is, I assume, with all of her work she's doing with the board, that she is also responsible for ensuring that we complete our training we're supposed to take.
100%. Yes. Is that, I thought that was captured.
I didn't see it there.
Okay. I'll review it. If it's not in there, Katie, I will put that in. That's a good catch.
You know, I just recently did like my 700 form, and does someone let JR know he needs to do that?
She does, the board clerk.
She'll do that.
He'll get it from election.
Okay.
It'll come through there.
And she's already lining up my 700.
Remind me, so I'd really.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
That's another one of her other duties. She is in close contact with elections, so that's all the reporting and everything. She does all of that.
I get emails from elections. And then under
preferred
skills or certifications,
yes.
IIMC certification, municipal clerk training, and CSDA governance training, are you saying those are required or preferred?
Those are preferred. I put those under preferred. I'm sorry, preferred slipped to the page up in front, but that's under preferred
training. Preferred skills,
correct.
Okay.
Yes. And the reason we put those on, CSDA is such a big part of our organization as we continue to learn what we get from them. We pay them a lot of money every year, but we get a lot from them, specifically on the training side of things. Our insurance is tied to that, so we want to put that in. Municipal clerk training and the IIMC training, I had to look that up. those are just desirable, and I think that once you get somebody, if we ever need to go to a full-time board clerk, I don't think we're there right now, but if you did, I would say that you'd want to have those kind of things.
Okay, I missed the preferred on the first
page. No worries.
Okay. I think I've gone to that training and we did have board clerks there.
The CSDA, yes, absolutely.
I'm pretty sure I did.
Yep.
Remember that.
And she also manages the training for the board members. So what trainings you want to go to, she manages your prevention or now vector solutions training. And then any filings for the board clerks or the board. So when your term is coming up, she'll remind you your term is coming up. Are you going to file and kind of help you remember those kind of things? Or when we have a vacancy, she works closely with elections. She gets the oath of office. She gets all of that dialed in and presents it here.
She does those things so seamlessly.
Yeah. 2 days
a week.
Yeah. 2 days a week. Although last week was five.
Public comment on this position? Okay. All right, moving on along. Staff update. And remember, we got February check register.
Yes.
24-5 audit. And the fire engine purchase update.
Yes, ma'am. You want to take the check register first? Do you have any comments on that one?
I do.
Okay.
Okay, we talked about the merch fees. I Bailey Accounting Services, 8885. Does it, do you mean? And then it says 24-5. So
what
this,
page are you looking at?
It's
10, I think.
7.
7, okay.
Oh, I bet.
Yes.
Is that, which audit is that, and is that the final payment?
I don't think it's final payment. We're still in audit, and that's for both 25-26 and 24-25. There's a few things that are in there left in there, so, and that's noted on there.
25-26, we're not even out of that year yet, are we?
But there's still things that we have to do and prep for that.
Four.
So we're
okay.
Still, we're doing things now for that. And then the 24, 25, we're closing that one out.
I was
going to
ask your status, but it's on your list, so you can tell me.
I will tell you.
Propane JS West, we had talked about, this needs to be for Mark. We had talked about there's a certain time period where we can try and get out of the contract. So can you make sure that all the background you have in your head is turned over to Mark?
We've already talked about it.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Perfect.
Yep, 100%.
That's a big number. Ladies, we talked about... Oh, and then that, this is Umpqua Bank commercial card. It looks like we just pay a lump sum probably to pay the credit card.
That's exactly what that is.
So does the individual transactions on each credit card get somehow
reconciled
out?
100%.
Okay.
Yes. we all have, because we get the death stare and the angry emails. So yes, so every employee is reconciled by the accounting department. They will call you and say, hey, we need these receipts, or you send those receipts in. They'll code all of them if we haven't coded them. And then they bring that, and we send those
it's
for
like,
approval.
Like an expense reporting.
Exactly. Now, I will tell you that's a weakness that we have in the organization, and we've already identified that, and we're working on it. I'm used to having an electronic system by which everything that you do comes, your card is connected to the system, it automatically comes in, and then when the charge is in, when the actual product or the fee comes in, it'll tie those two together, and then you approve it, and then your supervisor authorizes it, approves it, and then it goes to finance. That's what we should be doing right now. It's a paper process, but we really need to get to an electronic system where, like, you know, Mark would approve any of the parks, his parks employees. I would approve Mark's, and then mine would go to the board, and the board would say, yep, okay, that's that good, or the CFO.
How many credit cards do we have out there?
Oh, I would say we probably have 12. The fire department has four or five. Fire department's got 5. 1, 2, 3, 4. We probably have about 12.
It's a fair amount of work to reconcile those things. Oh.
Yes. And we found if you don't do it right now, like I'll take. And that was a neat thing about the system is I took a picture immediately and it fired right into the system. And by the time the charge came in, it tied those two together and I was done.
Yeah.
So and then I just get in there and code it.
So when you're auditing the report, you can look across, you can see them all of it in one place and all electronically, so you don't have to go grab papers.
So we just found that CSDA, one of the benefits of being a member, they have an electronic process. So we're looking into that because those other systems were quite expensive.
So when you have a charge, you have a code on what it is or something like that?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Boy, okay.
Because you need to allocate it to an account.
Right.
That's
right.
That's helpful.
Wow. Makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And then my last one is, and I probably should know this, but Whitman Enterprises.
Yes.
First responder fees billing services.
Yes.
That $24.75, is that like a fee that we pay, or do we ultimately get that back when the fee we pay? 18. Second to last.
That's the $14 per trainer.
So that's what I was
going to
ask.
That is, yeah, that's the first responder fee billing, yes. Yeah. That's
so
what that is.
So $24.75 divided by 14 is how many bills were released?
During this time period.
For a month? That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, we will be bringing, I think the number is going to go from 220. We're adding 163,000 to that. But you'd have to do the math on backing that out.
Do they get a percentage or a set fee?
The flat fee.
176 calls, then. Is that about right?
176 billable calls.
Billable calls, correct. Okay. Yeah, that's about right.
Okay. I was hoping there would be a revenue that would go behind.
Well, you won't see that one. You won't see that one in the check register. But yes. They did go live on March 1st on those, so I'm sure we'll start to see that when it comes across.
They keep calling me to say, pay the bill. I haven't paid my bill yet.
They are a collection agency, also.
I do intend to. But
you got in before it went up.
I'm working my finances.
Got it.
That's my questions on the check register.
Okay.
And I didn't see it, so I have nothing.
Okay.
John, anything? Check register? Okay. Audit.
Kudos to Laura. Because, you know, without having our finance HR officer here, she's kind of stepped into that role. And it's if you've never been a part of doing the audit and all of a sudden you're getting all these questions from the auditor, that can be pretty daunting and scary, honestly. So she's done a really, really good job. We've got the third-party consulting company who is doing the higher level kind of what does this mean? She draws the appropriate reports and things like that. Laura will get a list of everything that's needed from the auditors. She'll work with the third-party company on the things they need to work on. She'll pull everything else. So where we're at right now for 24-25, I think we're really close. In fact, we got the preliminary letter already, and they're testing right now. So they will send us a list of random things they need to pull, we need to pull, and then they need to review those, and then they'll test them, if you will. And then that's kind of the final phase. So I think we are within probably days of having that next one done. So maybe not March, but for sure by the
this
April.
This will be the first time in years that we have actually been on time.
That's what I was going to say. This is kind of amazing.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
We started immediately. So we had to wait for the year to close. So as soon as it closed, we started that process. That's why we're already working on 25-26. What do we need to do to get things set for that one?
We were several years behind.
Yeah. Three.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have to hear that.
Sorry, we were 3 years behind. I got nothing to hide. We were 3 years behind. I wasn't here. Mark wasn't here. We will never, we'll never do that again because the challenge with that is if you're behind in your audits, you honestly don't know your true starting point for the next year.
Yeah.
That's the problem, and that's where, you know, when I got here, can we make payroll? Can we do this? You got to know where you're starting from. If you're three audits behind, there's no way to truly know where you're starting from. So we are all caught up. We had what was it? It was a payment that came in almost 2 years. It was missed, and we couldn't put that 2 years ago, so that actually came in this year's budget.
It was fire.
So
it was something fire. Right?
Yes, it was something fire related, if I remember. So those are the interesting things with the audits. The auditor, we went with the same firm. We'll go with them another two years, I believe, and then that'll be the eight, and then we'll look again. I will tell you that there'll likely be a significant increase. Unless we can keep the same firm and have them switch partners, and hopefully Michael's got a second partner. That's what we did down the hill. As long as you switch partners, you're okay, but really at 8 years, you need to go out. We tested that theory a little bit, and I can tell you the numbers we got back. And Michael's great. I mean, it was significantly more. I thought we'd get a better deal.
Nope.
That's U.S. dollars? Yes. No, we're not doing that. I'm sure you're a great firm.
Can I
Nothing. Please thank Laura when you see her. She puts a lot. I'm guaranteed she's at her desk right now doing stuff on the audit.
Yep.
And I will say you will likely see maybe more comments on the audit this time, more notes from the auditor this time, because we did a deep dive and things that we couldn't explain from over the years. I have no idea why they did that. We told auditors we have nothing to hide. Here's everything. So we'll see if there's any findings.
Right.
When will that come to the board?
I'm hoping April.
April. Okay. That'd be great.
Item C, fire engine.
Fire engine update. So we got a update. This fire engine's been interesting. We purchased it years ago, or we in the contract years ago. It's pay on demand, and we got notification that there's an opportunity to get it sooner, or not get it sooner, to actually get it. I didn't think we were going to get it to 26-27 budget year, but it sounds like either we got moved up or whatever happened, it's coming. And so Chief Richards and Chief Martin are going to go back, along with the fire Cal Fire mechanic, they're going to go back to Idaho. They're going to do the inspection. It's that close. When are you guys going back there?
Monday.
Oh, they're going back Monday, so this is soon.
Yes.
Very soon. So they're going to go back. They'll do kind of the pre-inspection. They'll look at everything. Anything that needs to be fixed or changed, they'll do that on the list, and then we'll get a delivery date. I tell you all that because we need to make a decision, and I have a recommendation on whether or not we lease it or we pay cash for it. And at this point, after talking to Ken, our consultant, we have the funding in the. Are you thumbing through? Are you okay over there?
I thought we were
going to
lease it.
Yeah, we were going to lease it, but we looked at it, and Ken says, look, you guys have the money in the bank. You need to just buy it.
What's the lease terms look like?
They sent me the rates the other day, and they're a little bit higher than I thought.
What's the bill?
$396,000.
Oh, not as much as I thought.
No. They're not. It's a Type 3.
But don't we have to add more things to it?
We talked about that a little bit. And
some minor equipment, but we have hose from 288, which we sold.
Mm-hmm.
That'll kind of bridge us over, and it'll all be pretty minimal. It has the radios. We have the SCBAs from 288, so not a major impact. We need to see the compartment configurations and stuff to make sure everything fits right and the hose all fits right, but not a major expense for equipment.
What is this replacing?
This is replacing 389, which we got rid of
two years ago,
which was a 1996 International with more problems than. Imagine.
And 288 is the one we sold to the tribe?
Type 1,
correct. That was a Type 1.
But some of the equipment off the Type 1 can go. Like the 3-inch hose, which is pretty expensive.
So we're not getting this engine and buying all brand new equipment for it. They're going to use whatever they can. Even like the radios. I think there's one radio that you've got somewhere you're putting on. Mm-hmm. We're doing those
things. So based on Ken's recommendation, your recommendation is for us to purchase it outright.
Yes. We have the funds, in the bank. I'm just looking for it right here. We have the, We should have this year, I think, $719,000, because you'll remember that we put $129,000 as our annual investment in that, or allocation from the general fund to that account. And so there should be a little $719,000, I believe. So with that, we'll be taking this total amount from that, and then we'll just continue to put that $129,000 a year. We are due to start speccing out engine 89 this year and probably order... I would say probably next year is what it sounds like, in order to get it by 2030. 2030 is when we should be replacing that engine. So we're following that same plan. So we got time to rebuild that up. And again, what we're doing on the Type 1, we're definitely going to lease that one. That one will likely come in and probably close to $1 million, maybe a little over.
And then when's the lease payment up on the current 88?
The lease payment, we have three more payments. So when that one expires, it'll be time to take on the new one. So basically, it's already baked into the budget. the same lease payment will be in there. This 388 will just, or 88 will go away. 89 will come online, so you won't have any impact to the budget. It'll be the same, what we're used to.
Okay, so any comments?
No, it's just an interest. It's maybe less than I would have thought.
Well, yeah, because remember, there's two factors. One is this is a Cal Fire spec, and so we got locked in. Nobody can buy that spec. I think you remember the conversation.
Right, remember
I was
that
in a different
well.
Role. Yeah. We were trying to buy that from you all, and Cal Fire said, yeah, we'll let them out of the contract, but you're going to pay $465,000. And I'm like, it's the same engine.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's $396 is what we were looking at. I'm just looking at the purchase agreement for us right here. It's close to, it's over five now for it. So those are going up as well, but the Type 1 will be over $1 million. What we found out is what we typically do is we pay when the chassis is available, we pay for the chassis. So that's $200,000. So you're really going to finance $800,000. Typically we'll do that between 7 and 9 years. And I think that's appropriate. By the time an engine gets to midpoint, 88 should be up close to midpoint. You're lining yourself up to lease the next one. I wouldn't look at leasing as negative. I will tell you, I've done a lot of these. There's lots of white papers out there. A lot of cities don't purchase vehicles anymore. They lease them. It makes more sense to lease them to do that, and you refresh your fleet. People tend to, when you purchase them, you keep your vehicles way too long, and you end up spending more maintaining them than purchasing a new vehicle on a cycle. Plus, we're putting the money aside for it anyways.
So are we just purchasing a chassis?
No, we are purchasing. This is a fully outfitted engine ready to go. They just have to put equipment on there.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And that amount is $394,599.68.
And our goal would be to get it in service for the summer so then we can have a
100%
or hired assistance.
Fantastic.
Hired.
Good. Yeah.
So I'm guessing, and I won't speak for Chief, but I'm guessing this will be first out on strike teams and those kind of things, deployments, and we'll keep the 380 or vice versa, or flip it?
Yeah, we'll keep the new engine in the district.
And send the other one out?
Yep.
Perfect. Is there a break-in period for it?
I think there is.
25,000 miles on a IL-9 motor, so that's typically 25,000 miles, and they'll do that no problem.
And then this, it's the exact same engine that our mechanics have 20 of that mm-hmm. they're maintained, so they're highly familiar with
good, it. Good, good. Well, treat it well.
I got the same one in my big truck, so I know that one.
Change oil.
Change oil.
Public comment. Okay. Moving on along. Items for future committee, same stuff. items to take to the board, so we are taking landscaping contract award, the mm-hmm. LLAD engineers report, cash handling policy, the public records policy. That's it.
Yes, and probably for discussion, just the job descriptions.
But yeah, just no.
Yeah. Yep, yep.
Okay. So any matters to and from committee members?
Nothing.
Yeah?
This is my last B&A meeting.
This is your last B&A meeting. Happy
days.
Nice.
Okay, then I will ask
you
have to 7:18, I will adjourn the open meeting to the 5:00.